So we're learning Mishnah Tractate Bava Kamma, chapter 8, Mishnah 7. Let's start reading. Mishnah 7, it's Mishnah Zion. Bava Kamma. Here we are. Af al pi shehu noten lo, eino nimchal lo ad shivakesh mimeno. Okay, translation. It says, even though he gives to him, eino nimchalo, it's not forgiven to him, ad shivakesh mimenu, until he requests from him. So there are many different pronouns here. Let's make sure we understand what's going on. So the context of the last Mishnah that we saw last time, the sixth Mishnah, that talked about paying for damage you caused. In general, this whole chapter, remember, is talking about the five damages that are paid when you cause bodily damage to someone. We talked about Nezek, Saal, Ripui, Shevet, and Boshet, which in English means the damage, the doctor bills, the unemployment, the pain, the embarrassment, and that's five. The particular Mishnah that we studied last time, the one right before this, was focusing on the payment for embarrassment. And in that context, our Mishnah says, Afal pi shenoten lo, even though he gave to him, which means that the person who did the damage, caused the pain, caused the embarrassment, even though he gave to him, to the person who gets the money, to the person who was hurt, who was had pain caused him, to the person who was embarrassed, even though the damager gave the money to the damagee, eino nimchalo, it's not forgiven to him. Now, forgiven to him, of course, is a passive verb. It's a passive verb, which means we don't see the subject of the verb. Who's doing the forgiving? So let's ask that question right now. Who's doing the forgiving? But don't answer yet. Let's just read the sentence again. Even though the damager paid the damagee, it's not forgiven to him until he requests from him. In other words, until he, the damagee, requests forgiveness from the person who got damaged. So now let's ask the question, who is the subject of the verb who gives the forgiveness? Don't fall in the trap. Think before you answer. It's not forgiven to him until he requests forgiveness. Who's the subject? Who's the person? I gave it away. Who is the grantor of the forgiveness?
The damaged.
She fell in the trap. Ilana loses 2 points.
No, it's God.
It's God, right?
Ah.
That's the reason it's in the passive. Eino nimchalo doesn't say that that person doesn't forgive until you ask him. Like that's like an oxymoron to say that Ilana doesn't forgive me until I request that she forgives me. Rather, it's God doesn't forgive me until I ask of Ilana for forgiveness, even though I paid all the money I owe. I did everything the Torah says.
Right.
But still, God doesn't forgive me ad shivakesh mimenu, until I ask Ilana for forgiveness.
Why is it an oxymoron? You can give me back the money, but you have not restored my dignity.
Very good. That's actually true. And that has to do with the particular subject here of dignity. It's exactly the point. That's very good. And you're right. It wasn't a full... Yeah, you get your 2 points back, right? It wasn't a full oxymoron. Because had we been talking about merely damage money or unemployment or money for the doctor bills, you might say, why do you have to ask forgiveness? You paid what you have to pay. The case should be closed. But since the focus here is on dignity, on honor, on embarrassment caused, that's a deeply emotional thing. And the Chachamim are very aware of the fact that, yes, they have to set a monetary value for it, and yes, you have to pay for it, but that really doesn't exhaust the meaning of insulting someone. It doesn't exhaust the meaning for the person who got insulted. It also doesn't exhaust the meaning for the person who did the insulting. The person who did the insulting might be very happy to pay $1 million for it. He really wants to insult that person. What we really want from the person who did the insulting is for him to apologize.
It's halpanat panim.
Of course, it's halpanat panim.
Yeah.
Which Chachamim say is equivalent to murder, yes. Not literally. So anyway, we understand now that in the particular context of focusing on insult and on embarrassment, the Mishnah says that even though you paid what you owed, you're not forgiven by God until you request forgiveness.
Actually, I think it's connecting with your activities for peace, because part of the problem that the Jews and the Arabs have is that they feel that they are shamed.
Yes, especially on the Palestinian side.
Yes.
But let's
yes.
not get off the subject.
Yeah.
And now the Mishnah says, Shana'amar, as it says. So we're going to look for the proof text. So we have a few Humashim, I see four.
Yes.
So let's open up.
If you tell me which book, I have separate books.
We're in Bereshit, but we don't really have time.
Four is good enough.
Let's just do what we can.
I mean, just read it out loud.
Let's see. So I'm looking in the book of Bereshit. And the verse that we're in is chapter 20. Chapter 20, it's a good part of the chapter. The context here is the interchange between Avram Avinu and Avimelech and Sarah. So you remember that Avimelech took Sarah
yes.
from Avraham for the purpose of violating her, of marrying her. And then God comes to him and says, you didn't do such a good thing here.
And he didn't know she was married, though.
Perhaps he didn't know, let's say. Not clear.
He said.
But let's not go into all the details here. He certainly, even if it's the sister, you don't just take a woman like that for nothing. So let's not go into the whole context here. So we're looking.
Those are the good old days.
Okay.
Those were the bad old days. In that sense. I'm looking for the place.
Lon, you're
here
in
it is.
Trouble today.
Here it is.
I know. I'm just
kidding. So, so I'm in chapter 20, verse 6. God said to him in a dream, I also know that it was with a whole heart that you did this. And so also, I held you back from being at fault against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. But now return the man's wife, says God to Avimelech. Indeed, he is a prophet. He could intercede for you and live. Sounds like if he intercedes for you, you will live. But if you do not return her, know that you must die. Yes, die in all that is yours. Early in the morning, Avimelech called his servants. He spoke all these words in their ears. The men became exceedingly afraid. Then Avimelech had Avram called and said to him, what have you done to us? And what did I fail you? That you have brought me and my kingdom into such great fault. Deeds which are not to be done, you have done to me, said Avimelech to Avraham. And Avimelech said further to Avraham, what did you foresee that you did this to me? Avram said, indeed, I said to myself, surely there's no awe of God in this place. They will kill me on account of my wife. Then too, she is truly my sister, my father's daughter. However, not my mother's daughter. So mm-hmm, she became my wife. Now it was, when the power of God caused me to roam from my father's house, said Abraham, that I said to her, let this be the faithfulness that you do me, in every place we come, save me, here's my brother. So they're both, they are brother and sister, half, they also husband and wife. Avimelech took sheep and oxen, servants and maids, and gave them to Abraham. He made payment, and returned Sarah his wife to him. Avimelech said, here my land is before you, settle wherever seems good in your eyes. And to Sarah he said, here I have given 1,000 pieces of silver to your brother. Here it shall serve you as a covering for the eyes for all that you, all who are with you. Some type of payment for embarrassment, for insult. And with everyone that you have decided for. Abraham interceded with God, and God healed Avimelech. That's the proof, according to the Mishnah, for the assertion that you're not forgiven until you ask for forgiveness. And indeed, the Mishnah brings the verse that says, V'ata hashev eshet v'gomer. And now, return the woman. And the Mishnah assumes that we know that we have to read on and on and on and on until we get to the end of the chapter and understand that the proof is that Avimelech was healed only after Avram interceded with him. So the proof comes from the fact that God didn't forgive, didn't heal, until Avraham, the one who was hurt, as it were, who was right. insulted, until Avraham actually interceded. That's the proof. We'll talk about that exactly. So now we understand the proof, but we don't. What's the false? How would I say it? What's the lacuna? What's missing? What's the problematics in this proof?
There's a lot of problems. First of all, he says that he can intercede for him only because he's Navi. Whatever Navi means at that period.
Yeah.
So that means that simple people's forgiveness might not be enough.
Okay, right. You're right. That's a good point. The assumption is that we can learn from here, since God only interceded to heal Avimelech after Avraham prayed, but you can learn from that in general, that only when the person who's been hurt has been appeased, is God all willing to forgive. But there's another problem in the proof. What are we trying to prove? That the person who has done the damage has to apologize, has to ask for forgiveness.
He doesn't say that. He doesn't apologize.
He doesn't.
He accuses Abraham for lying
right?
to him.
Right, that's the problem here. The verses don't say that Avimelech apologized. Like Ilana said, he actually accuses Abraham.
All right, yes. So there's a midrash.
Apparently, there's an assumption here that if Avraham intercedes, prays for Avimelech, that Avraham heard between the lines of Avimelech's accusations, you also heard a certain type of apology. But we have to admit, at least that's the way it seems to me, that this proof is not such a strong proof. It's a problematic proof.
No, because actually it compensates him financially, physically, not emotionally.
And indeed, you're right, that's the very problem here. The proof really doesn't prove what we want to prove. It does prove that God doesn't forgive until the person who's been hurt feels appeased, is willing to be... I should say that differently. God doesn't forgive till the person who's been hurt is willing to have God forgive. But does that depend on the person who did the damage asking for forgiveness? That's not clear from the verses.
Not
that
clear.
The Mishnah seems to assume without really having a definitive proof for that. Okay?
Could the assumption of asking for forgiveness be included in the payment for the damage?
No.
Well, that's exactly the problem, because the Mishnah's whole point is that paying is not enough.
They say you're not forgiven until you ask for forgiveness.
Now, you can say that Avimelech went beyond the call of duty here, because he gave also a lot of money. He gave these 1,000 pieces of silver, but still, it's just money.
Abraham be able to read between the lines and distinguish the point where you're distinguish the point from where you're paying because you have to pay and you feel like it's the right thing to do, and you're paying because you want to pay. And even though I am assuming that his pride would not let him directly apologize, there's a certain amount of guilt that he must have felt in order for Abraham to forgive him.
You're right, and that's good.
But it's not what the Mishnah says.
But the Mishnah wants to say more than that. The Mishnah is not willing to let you give more money than you have to give. The Mishnah wants you to, exactly as it says, Shiva Kesh Mimenu. And that's hard to do, right? Hard to do.
Exactly.
And Avimelech, according to the Pshat, didn't do it. But anyway, that's word under the bridge. What can we do?
Does the Talmud notice that?
No.
So you're the first.
No. Okay. So
with Moshe praying for his sister to be healed after that.
El Narefanala.
Yeah. Did she? I guess there's no record of her apologizing.
No.
Very good point.
But then, couldn't you read this as saying, if it's God who's forgiving, then God doesn't forgive the person until. The person, till somebody else, or the damaged individual,
asks
for it, not implying that. So, not strictly speaking, that the damager has to apologize.
Right, but that's exactly the lacuna. That's exactly the fallacy of what's going on here. Because the Mishnah wants to say explicitly, it says that it's not enough that the person who has been hurt forgives and asks God to forgive. It's not enough. Rather, the person who did the damage has to ask.
No, why couldn't it be the person who was damaged has to ask?
You're disputing the way I'm reading the pronouns in the Mishnah.
Yeah, I mean, if they're...
Very interesting. Interesting.
What's his
Kiddush? So let's try what Amiram just said. Amiram goes back to the Mishnah. This is 2 points at least, if not three. I don't think you're right, but it's creative. So Amiram says the following: Afal pi shehu notein lo, and the who of course is the person who did the damage. Eino nimcha lo, it's not forbidden to him, to the person who did the damage. Ad sheyivakesh mimenu, and you say yivakesh is not the person who did the damage. It's suddenly switching subject in mid-sentence, you're saying.
Doesn't work.
Yes.
And it's now yivakesh mimenu is that the person who got hurt, yivakesh mimenu from God.
Right.
So that's beautiful. That's a beautiful midrash. Of course, it doesn't really fit grammatically because, number one, you're changing subject without any indication of that, and you're adding a new subject, mimenu, from God.
Well, we already have God as the one forgiving, right? From this, I mean, that's what you're going to
get. Aha.
So we've got God already.
But it's still, it's a passive. Right? God is assumed.
Nimchali is just an action.
So I think you should write an article about it. It's a fascinating interpretation. Right? The Gemara doesn't understand like that. The Rishonim don't. No one understands like that. But it's,
and I mean, it's awfully forced, but it's the only thing that fits the two examples that we have of people asking forgiveness on behalf of somebody else.
That's a very good point.
Or whatever.
Do we have any asking
very interesting
forgiveness
in
I'm just thinking of the only, besides those two.
So. Do we have asking of forgiveness in the Tanakh at all?
I'm never good at that.
Which was the king Kain. who
Kain
was...
is saying Gadolavoni means.
Yeah, although he just says he'll be...
he can't ask Hevel anymore because Hevel is dead. So he asks God.
Who's the king that was told he was going to die and then he...
Oh, David?
No, it was...
Bathsheba?
It was a lot later.
He also killed.
I guess there's a Nineveh, but they was...
Nineveh in Yonah?
But they didn't ask forgiveness.
Okay, so, you know what? What you're saying is fascinating. I don't remember offhand examples. Perhaps there are one or two examples, but you're right. It's rare in the Tanakh that we see that level of description of inner processes expressed through words.
What about Joseph and his brothers?
What about them?
They don't apologize?
They're scared of him when the father died. Right.
They make amends in their actions for certain, but that they actually say the words.
And then he says it was all predestined, right?
Yes.
If I recall from that.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so one could say, I don't think that Amiram is telling us the pshat of the Mishnah. Certainly none of the Rishonim understood like that. But what we've discovered, and I hadn't thought of this before, this matter of asking forgiveness seems to be an innovation indeed, a newer level of psychology than we have explicit in Tanakh. You know, another example of this is the following. The whole matter of Korban Chatat,
right,
of the sin offering in the Torah. So a sin offering is offered only for inadvertent sin, for mistakes. There is no sin offering for a mezid, doing on purpose. Now, and Chachamim say that the sin offering doesn't work. There's no kapra, there's no forgiveness for even inadvertent sin unless you go through a process of tshuva, to you confess. But that's not written in the Torah.
So that's in the Mishnah period or in the Talmud?
It's in the Mishnah.
Right. Well, the fact that it's not written, I mean, why so is the that sensitive.
So we're just pointing out that level of psychology, right, of soulful sensitivity, is not explicit in the Torah. It waits for a later layer in Jewish intellectual history to be developed, perhaps.
Torch of Voltaire,
that's what I mean.
But I mean, couldn't it have been, you know,
Okay, that's all. That's a different issue. I don't think there's so much room for that, but others might disagree. That's another. Because I'm talking about that tonight. My class at 7:30. Something else. Okay.
Oh, shameless plug.
Yeah. So let's go on in the Mishnah. Very interesting. I may actually make a note about that. I'm just gonna.
In a way, we are developing more sensitivity. Hopefully,
perhaps
we'll be good when they.
Okay, so we go on, and then the Mishnah says, "Uminayin shelo yehe hamochel achzari." From where, and it means from where, do you know that the mochel, the person who does the forgiving, that's the person who's been hurt, achzari? How do you know that he shouldn't be cruel? In other words, when the person who did the damage asks, "Forgive me," you shouldn't be cruel and withhold it, but you should forgive. How do you know that? What's the source? Asks the Mishnah. And the answer is the same set of verses we just saw. Shenemar, Bitpelel Avraham El Elohim, V'yirpa Elohim et Avimelech. That Avraham davened to God, and God healed Avimelech. And the point is that Avraham immediately was appeased and accepted the request of Avimelech for forgiveness, which we said is not written, but Avraham immediately was appeased and prayed to God for the good of Avimelech. Right. So you see there that you shouldn't be achzari, you shouldn't be cruel, you shouldn't withhold the forgiveness. Now, I just have to say, of course, that there's really, again, no proof from here. All we see is that's what Avraham did. Who says that that's where you're always supposed to behave? Perhaps that was lifnei mishurat hadin, perhaps it was beyond the letter of the law. It's a story, it's not a law, it's not a commandment, it's not a normative dicta, it's a story. So
how come here the one, the mochel, is the individual and not God? I mean, it would be...
Oh, you're right.
Oh, very good, very good.
Yeah, you lost your proof, and now you can't...
Very good, you're right. Here the mochel, ha-mochel, right, the person who does their forgiving, is the person who's been hurt, whereas earlier in the passive verb, and I think that's the difference, the passive verb, enonim chalo, it's not forgiven to him. Things are forgiven to you in that passive sense, like in a metaphysical sense, not someone forgiving you, but being forgiven, right? That only comes from
God. Well, the thing is that you might ask for forgiveness and the person might not forgive you. So by just asking, God will forgive you like that.
We didn't say that.
Just by asking. I mean, if I ask someone for forgiveness and he doesn't forgive me, I did my part, and therefore God's going to forgive me.
Okay, so that's a very good point that you've just made, and I glossed over that earlier. I should have pointed it out. Thank you. That when the Mishnah says you're not forgiven until you ask for forgiveness, you might get the impression that all you have to do is ask and God forgives you, but we left out the stage that the person who you're asking to forgive you has to forgive you. How do I know that that's an important stage? Because that's again in the proof text. That's in the proof text. But you're right, it's not written. That right. Most important point is assume they're not written.
Don't you have to ask like 5, 3 times?
We're actually going to get to that. We're going to get to that. But very good point. Okay.
So it's a mess still if you ask and the person doesn't forgive you.
I'm just making a note of what he said. Excuse me.
The person doesn't. You ask for forgiveness. They don't forgive you.
Then you're not forgiven.
They didn't forgive you. God doesn't forgive you.
Right. It looks like God forgave Avimelech only after Avraham asked that God forgive. You need the person to be appeased. The person who was hurt, you need him to be appeased.
Which makes sense,
but it's interesting. It's not clear.
And if he doesn't do it, he's being cruel.
It's beautiful. Right. So your attorney in front of God is the person you damaged.
Say it again, please. You are?
The attorney that represents you before God is the person you have hurt the most.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point, and actually I want to get back to that also. That's a good point. Let's see. We're going on in the Mishnah to the second half of the Mishnah. It deals with a different subject.
Right. Mm-hmm.
and the different subject, before we read the second half of the Mishnah, let's read the end of the previous Mishnah to remember this other subject. So the end of the previous Mishnah, we're in Mishnah Vav, and I'm in the very, very end of it, and we have a statement there that's a proof text for Rabbi Akiva, and it says, let's see, it's 20 words from the end of the Mishnah, approximately 25. Hachovel ba'atzmo afal pi sheino rashai patur. He who damages himself, bodily injury, even though he's not allowed, he is exempt. In other words, if I punch myself in the nose, that's forbidden. You're not allowed to do that. Even I can't do it to me. It's forbidden. But I don't have to pay damage money to myself because it's my money.
You
right?
have to remove it from your checkbook right? to your checkbook.
So even though I'm exempt from paying, don't learn from the fact that I'm exempt from paying that you're allowed to do it. You're not allowed to hurt yourself. With that information, we go to today's Mishnah, where we left off, at the second half of the Mishnah. And it says as follows, Ha'omer samei et eini, keta et yadi, shavur et ragli, chayav. Translation, he who says, poke out my eye, cut off my arm, break my leg, chayav, culpable. Which means, I'll use Lan as an example, if I say to Lan, do all these terrible things to me, and he does them, even though I told him to do it,
I owe you money.
He owes me money.
Oh, I thought you
it's an investment.
What?
Who said Lan is to do it?
Wait a minute.
I told Lan, God forbid, poke out my eye, and he did it.
And he did.
He has to pay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I owe him money, yeah.
But you right? should not you never yeah. know how much he's paying you.
Yeah, let's give an example. If somebody is under drug influence,
right,
he
whatever,
might say
even
now
not.
Things.
Even not.
Yeah.
Since I'm not allowed to do damage to myself.
It means you it also
I'm not allowed to allow someone else to do damage. It makes perfect almost. Sense.
It also means if yeah. you if this principle is correct, if you assist somebody in suicide, you are liable for murder.
Oh.
Yeah. Although we don't always learn the laws of murder from the laws of damages, there's also a difference. For example, in damages, you are culpable even if you did it unintentionally. Whereas unintentional murder is a whole different can of worms.
Oh, I guess you're right.
Right? So we usually don't learn one from the other.
Okay.
So I'm going to read again this line of the Mishnah. Ha'omer samei et eini keta et yadi shavor et ragli chayav al manat liftor. Chayav. Translation again. He who says, poke out my eye, chop off my arm, break my leg, he's culpable. In order to be exempt, culpable. That's the translation. Doesn't make any sense.
What?
The Mishnah is being elliptical. It's leaving out words. When it says, in order to be exempt, he's culpable. It means even if I said to Lan, when I said to him, cut off my arm or break my leg or poke out my eye, if I said it to him, and even if I said, do all those things and you will be exempt, he's still chayav. Yeah. He's still chayav.
What if he only does them if he thinks he's going to be exempt?
Exactly the point. He thinks he's going to be exempt.
Right.
He thinks he's not going to have to pay. But he still has to pay because I have no permission to give him permission to do those things. Since I can't allow him to do those things, therefore the fact that I said you're not going to have to pay is completely and absolutely meaningless.
So what do you do in gangrene when people's foot has to be cut?
Well, that's to
well,
save,
that's
their life.
Save their life.
What?
You're actually helping them.
Yeah. Now, I'll come back to this in a minute. But I want to read the Mishnah through and then come back to it. So then the Mishnah says, Kara et kisuti, shvor et kadi, chayav, almanat liftor, patur. Translation, rip my shirt. Kisut really means my garment. Rip my garment. Shvor et kadi, break my jug. I say to Lan these things. Chayav, he has to pay. But if I say almanat liftor, if I say break my jug and I add almanat liftor, in order that you'll be exempt, the halacha is exempt.
Right.
Why? Because I'm allowed to break my jug. I have permission to break my jug and tear my shirt. Since I have permission to do that, I can give him... Well, I didn't say that. Well, I think it says... And if I give him permission, it says he's chayav. He has to pay. Right? I gave you permission. You're allowed to...
No, I may not lift off the tool.
Right. If I say break my jug, I'm allowed to tell you that. And you're allowed to break it.
But you still have to pay.
Oh. Right? You didn't do any isur. You didn't transgress for making my jug because I'm allowed to give you permission to break it. But I didn't say that you won't have to pay. You have to pay. But if I say break my jug and you won't have to pay, then you don't have to pay.
Right.
Makes perfect sense.
You break it, you buy it.
Right? And then the Mishnah goes on to say, Asei chen le'ish ploni. Do so to ish ploni. Do so to someone else. Right? I say to Talan, break Amiram's glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Amiram is a little...
And I add, and I say, Almanat liftor. In order that you be exempt. I say, break his glass and you won't have to pay. The halakha is chayav. You have to pay.
Don't listen to
me. Right? Because I can't give you permission to break his glasses or to not have to pay. It has nothing to do with me. It's his glasses, it's his money. And this has to do, bein begufo, bein bemamono, whether his body or his possessions. Right? If I say, hurt him physically, certainly you're not allowed, and certainly you have to pay, but even his glasses or his shirt, I have no say over those things. Just let me say one thing, and we should remember the famous Talmudic statement that says, ein shaliach, Ledavar Avira, right? There's no... how do you
messenger.
Say in English? Thank
does
you.
Does that protect you?
Right. There's no agency for Avira, which means the following. If I tell Lan to do these things to Amiram, and he does them, certainly someone has to pay, but the person who has to pay is Lan and not me.
You just pay it off.
What?
I am guilty of doing a very, very not nice thing.
Inciting.
I don't have to pay, though.
So there's no penalty for inciting to violence in Jewish law?
Ah.
Inciting, wait.
So like a mafia boss.
What do you
exactly. I was thinking about the mafia, too.
Interesting. But even just like
that's,
somebody...
That's you have some control over, some force over you.
Yeah.
You have a gun to somebody's head and say, go break
right, that's different. That certainly is different. I don't know here the law. I know that as far as the laws of damages... I am not responsible, he's responsible. But as far as are there other things that Hachamim enacted here to prevent
how about hate crimes?
Like again, I don't know.
Like the Ku Klux Klan incites people to hurt others.
Didn't we have a case? Oh, we had a case in which the Mishnah said you sicked your dog on someone. Didn't we have
She
sat kalbo in the second chapter? I don't know, perhaps we
might. Your dog is your
property. But my point is, even there.
Your dogs are laying there.
Like, you know, but you know, if your property is damaged,
what the dog
is. It's like it's
essential.
So I just don't remember. I don't remember.
It's but like you leash your wool.
In general, ein shiliyah for davar avira. Now, the Hachamim say that as far as guilt goes, not punishment, not payment, as far as guilt goes, ein shiliyah for davar avira doesn't come to exempt me from guilt. It comes to put the guilt and the payment upon someone else. I mean, it's clearly I did something wrong.
Right. You can't say I was just
following
orders.
That I did that I'm fine. But it means that Lan can't say someone else told me to do it. No. Angel left the var and
just following orders.
He has to pay.
So because you didn't do anything physical, you didn't physically break his glasses, you don't have to pay the physical payment. However, you're not exempt from the emotional payment because that's the hand you had in it. So it seems like whatever hand you had and whatever act was done is what you have to pay.
That's fair. That's fascinating. So
yeah, but so would you say that Hitler...
So as far as the damage money, even the money for bullshit, for insult, that I don't have to pay. But I don't know, if Hachamim said anything about any type of responsibility on my part. I know they said that I shouldn't do it, but it's not a nice thing. But is there any payment that would be made on my part? I don't know. I don't know. And it could be there isn't. But remember again, in Talmudic law, we've discussed this in the past, the fact that there's no punishment for something doesn't mean that it's not a serious thing. And that's the difference between Talmudic law, Jewish law, and secular law. And secular law, in general, the punishment should fit the crime. And when the punishment is less or non-existent, that means the crime is less or non-existent. It's not so in Talmudic law, because the assumption is there's always the hand of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There are things that are very serious, and Talmudic law says don't do them, but it says you are exempt from punishment if you do them. But that doesn't mean that the Talmud understands that there's going to be a free rein to people to do these things, because we're in a system which people believe that God is ultimately in charge.
Right? How can the Mishnah give examples of ways that, you know, Hashem can punish people? If we're going to say some things are bad things to do and God will punish you, why is there like Kalet? Why do we ever discuss that if it's kind of a separate thing?
You're saying, why does the Torah and the Halakha say that there's punishment at the hand of heaven for certain things, when the truth is there's also punishment in other cases as well? That's your question?
Yeah, why is it enumerated in special?
I don't know. I have no answer to that. A possible answer could be that Torah only talks about the most serious things.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. But more than that, I don't know. I don't know. Although, okay, I have a certain answer, but I'll leave it in my bedroom for now.
Hey. Yes. I have a completely... I heard a completely different interpretation of this section.
Let's go. Let's hear.
Try. You're not going to like it, but...
I don't like it. I absolutely hate it.
A person who says, take out my eye or cut off my hand and break my leg, he's required. Even to leave Torah, he's required. I heard that...
I'm not understanding.
I was just translating. Mm-hmm. I thought, and a friend of mine at the Beit Midrash came up with this, and the rabbi liked the idea, that if I did you a crime, and you said, oh, that's okay, I'll just, you know, like, if I poked your eye, and he says, okay, I'll just poke your eye back. You're not allowed to do that. You're still chayav. Meaning, like, you're not allowed to do eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, literally.
You can't carry out your own justice.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't go to the literal meaning of eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth.
I've just never seen that.
You don't
never.
No, I told you. Yeah, like, but it's like saying, you know, semantina, you know, in order liftor, you, because.
Okay,
you know what I mean.
Okay, I hear. That's certainly true that the halakha you're saying is true, but I don't think it's what the Mishnah is saying. Okay, so let's
is it clear
go on now.
Yeah. Okay. But it's okay.
So now there's one more thing that we want to point out in this Mishnah before we go on to examining other sources, which is that I pulled the wool over your eyes. I fooled you. I said something that's patently false, and no one said anything.
How
Let's
could you
go back to the beginning of the second part of the Mishnah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it says like this, Ha'omer... Samei et eini keta et yadi shavuot ragli chayav almanat liftor chayav. Translation again. He who says, take out my eye, cut off my arm, break my leg, chayav. Even though I said you could do it, you still have to pay. Almanat liftor, and even if I said you can do it and you are patur, you're exempt from payment, chayav. You still have to pay. And earlier I said, I'll explain that to you. Since I don't have permission to do a damage to my body, therefore I don't have permission to tell you to damage my body. And since I don't have permission to tell you to damage my body, if you do it, you did something forbidden, and if you do it, you have to pay. That's what I said, and everyone said it sounded good. It does sound good, but it's faulty logic. It's faulty logic for the following reason. There's a Talmudic rule that's total common sense that says, I'm allowed to do with my money whatever I want. I can give my money away. I can give you a present. I can give you a present. I have the right to give away my money.
Mm.
And therefore, if I say to Lan, take out my eye, he's not allowed to do it. But if I say to Lan, take out my eye, and you don't have to pay, you're patur, then he's not allowed to do it. But if he does it, he shouldn't have to pay, because I said to him, I don't want the money. If I don't want the money, that means that I basically said, when you give the money, I'm giving it back to you. So why does the Mishnah say chayav? The Mishnah should say patur. It should say that if I say to him, I'll not leave Torah, then if he did it, he did an isur, he transgressed, but he should be exempt from paying. What does the Mishnah say that he is chayav?
Well, it's not, he has to pay. It doesn't make a difference if you want to do it with the money. That's a whole separate deal.
You can give back to him.
Yeah, I know. The court will force him to pay. Now, if you want to give that money back to him, that's your
but I already promised that I'm giving the money back.
Then if you don't give the money back, we'll take you to court, and you'll hope the court will make him give the money back. It happens regularly in America. A child wants to practice a dangerous sport, a martial art or something, and the child can't sign his rights away, but the parent can say, in the event my child happens to sue you, I agree to give you whatever money the court would have given the child. And therefore, it just reverses itself out. And it's just contract law that, okay, the court gives it to the child sues, and then whatever that money is, a contract, he's already agreed to give it back. So it washes out.
So the halakha should be patur.
Well, they're still liable. As I think Benny said, they're still liable. The court's still going to order whatever it's supposed to order. The child, didn't have the capacity to do it. I don't have the capacity to give you permission to harm me. So once you do, I get the money. However, you're exempt. I hear.
But the Talmud doesn't understand like that. It understands that if it says chayav, it means ultimately the guy has to pay. Ultimately, the guy ends up losing money. Whereas the truth is, he doesn't end up losing money because I have to give it back to him. So the Talmud stands on its head to re-understand this. I'm not going to explain to you how to understand it because it's too complicated. Perhaps your interpretation is better. But the way the Gemara understands it is that something is really, really fishy here.
Well, is there a difference between having to pay and actually losing money?
I understand. That's basically similar to what your father is saying. Yeah, all I can say is the Talmud doesn't...
That's why I had her to agree with me.
Very good. Very good. Okay, so with that background, now we're going to start thinking deeply. So let's look at the sources of our board here. We have an hour and 10 minutes to look at them, and this should be enough. So we're in B on the sheets here. Babylonian Talmud Tractate Baba Kama, page 92a. And the source reads like this. The first word is Gemara, right? The first word line in Hebrew is the source, Talmud Bavlima, second Baba Kama. It says Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. In other words, the Talmud on our Mishnah is opening by saying Tanu Rabbanan, which means taught our rabbis taught, which means we're bringing a braita, which means a source from the same period of the Mishnah, but it didn't enter the corpus of the Mishnah. And what it says is the following, Kol elu sha'amru temei boshto, aval tsa'aro, afilu hivi kol elei nivi'ot shebolam, ein nimcha lo ad shivakesh mimenu, sh'ne'amar, bringing a verse from Breshit, Hashev Esheta Ish Kinavihu Vitpalel Ba'adcha. Translation, our rabbis taught, all these that we said, and it means all of the payments discussed in the Mishnah, whether, remember last time, a matter of poking out his eye, or pulling his hair, or taking the woman's hair covering off in the marketplace, or slapping, or pulling someone's hair. All of these are demei boshto, are talking about payments for insult. Payments for his insult, right? You see, one of the five payments is demei boshet. Avel tsa'aro, but if you pained him, and I'll just stop and say that the language here is very, very difficult in the Braita. It's very confusing. Let me just tell you the interpretation of most of the commentators, and we'll just go on instead of spending time on the nitty-gritty details. The commentators understand that the word sar here is really a synonym for boshet. And the distinction that the Bright is making is between the payment for the bullshit and the bullshit itself. The payment for the insult and the insult itself. So read it as follows, even though, again, the words are difficult. All of these things we talked about in the previous Mishnah are payment for insult. But concerning the insult itself, even if you brought all of the rams of the village of Nevaot in the whole world, in other words, even if you brought all of the korbanot chatat, the sacrificial rams in the world, Eino nimchalo ad shivakesh mimenu. You're not forgiven, right? That phrase is from the Mishnah. Eino nimchalo ad shivakesh mimenu. He's not forgiven until he asks of him. And it brings the same verse that we saw in the Mishnah. So this Braita is very similar to what we have in the Mishnah. It's almost the same thing. But it's just emphasizing that the payment is only payment. But as far as the essence of the insult that you did, even if you brought all of the sacrifice in the world, it doesn't help until you ask for forgiveness and you are granted forgiveness.
So this is a very serious issue, that some deeds are not reversible, in a way. If you shamed somebody, if you pay him whatever it is, you shamed that person. You didn't undo the shaming. And that is the dilemma that they have, how to undo something that is irreversible.
Well, you know,
so it's like you can't buy someone off.
But cutting off someone's leg is also irreversible.
That's true.
But there's payment for it. But bullshit is something
deeper.
Is deeper, I guess, something deeper.
So there's a difference between making amends and reversing. Even though you want to ultimately try and reverse as much that has been possible, if all you can do is make amends, then you should try your hardest to make those amends to the fullest degree, right?
Right, and for some things, money makes full amends, but for bullshit, money doesn't make full amends.
What about if you hurt someone intentionally? You get angry with them?
Yeah.
And you break their leg in a fight.
Yeah.
Should you be more forgiven for that because you pay and it's over? I mean, why is that injury? Are you separating the injury of that from the indignity of it or something?
So that actually is a very good point. And I think the Rambam's about to deal with that. Because the Mishnah and explicitly the Braita say that it's in the case of bullshit that you ask for forgiveness. But the Rambam expands that to all avirot bein adam l'chaviro, all person-to-person sins, as we'll see. But that's very good, right? The Rambam actually goes beyond the sources that we have. So just let me say one thing, which is that the Braita makes explicit things that are very clear, I'm sorry, things that are less clear in the Mishnah, but doesn't really yet add anything except for this reference of even if you brought all the sacrifices in the world. Why does it bring in this matter of sacrifices? Well, probably because
there were no more sacrifices.
In the Torah, kapara, right, ultimate forgiveness is associated with sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And now we're explicitly being told, this goes back to things we said 10 minutes ago, we're explicitly being told that despite what the Torah says, that sacrifice brings kapara, it doesn't. Until you mifakesh, until you ask for forgiveness. Oh, this really goes back to what we're talking about. This bright, in a certain sense, is explicit in showing us how the Chachamim are adding additional level into the Torah's requirements for that person who does bad to the other. The Torah talks about korbanot, and
they have one
explicitly, and the Torah talks about payments less explicitly, and doesn't talk at all about requesting forgiveness. But the Chachamim say, I know the Torah says you should bring elim, you should bring rams, but we're telling you, you do have to bring those things, but it's not enough. There's an additional requirement here, shivakesh mimenu.
These two other elements in the Torah, the Vidui, and the Sa'il Azazel. That is another form of...
But remember, the Vidui is later. The Kohen Gadol. It doesn't say they're all Am Yisrael. In Yom Kippur it doesn't.
Right.
But actually in this week's Torah portion we read yesterday, it talks about Hitvadut Avonam, right? The last few verses of...
That's why I remembered it.
There's only two prakim.
Leviticus.
Vayikra.
At least in my opinion, as a 15-year-old girl, actually having to go and say, "I'm sorry, I apologize, I did something wrong," that to me seems like it would count as both a payment and a sacrifice and something more on an additional level. Let's say you shame someone. Well, having to go and then physically admit, like, "I'm sorry," would be a sacrifice on your part, because that is a issue of pride there. That's an issue of having to step back and really, really understand that you did something wrong. So while you can be able to bring rams to try to make amends, it's still not a sacrifice until you sacrifice what you took from the other person.
Beautiful.
That's very nice.
So what you're saying, that the deepest
you sacrifice your pride,
deepest thing you can do is the asking for...
Yeah.
That's the deepest thing. Hachamim tell us that when the Beit Mikdash no longer exists, don't worry, you can still get kapara by asking for forgiveness. And that makes perfect sense in light of what you said. Okay, so now let's look at the Rambam. What did the Rambam do with this Mishnah of ours and with this Brayta of ours? Here's the Rambam. It's C on the sheet. Rambam Mishneh Torah Hilchot Chovel, Chapter 5, Halakha 9 and Halakha 10. So the Rambam says, and look what I did this time. I brought the English.
How dare
so
you.
So for those who want to look at the English, I have it there. I'll read the Hebrew, but the English translation
is... Look how much more space English takes.
It does. Eino dome. If you want to follow in English, you can. Last two paragraphs on this page. Eino dome mazik chaviro begufo lemezik mamono.
All right.
Shaha mezik mamon chaviro kevan sheshilem mashu chayav leshalem nitkaper lo. He's forgiven. Aval chovel b'chaviro, but someone who does damage to the body, afal pish natan lo chamishad varim, even though he gave them all five payments, ein mitkaper lo. Vafilu hikriv kol elei neveyot, even he brought all of the rams in the world, ein mitkaper lo. V'lo nimchal avono, and he's not forgiven, ad shivakesh minoch nechbal v'imchol lo.
Is Nevayot famous for its rams?
Yes. Say for Yeshayahu 67, I just didn't have time to look at it. But you can look it up. So anyway, let's compare the Rambam to the two sources that he's based upon. And it's clear that the Rambam is faithfully copying the source in the Mishnah and the Braita. The one question I'll ask is, what does the Rambam add? And actually, I just about said it 5 minutes ago. What does the Rambam add that's not found in his two sources, the Mishnah and the Braita?
He's separating... his separation is different between Mamonot and non-Mamonot.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's uniting all Chabalot, both emotional and physical, as one unit.
Right. Right, from the sources we've been using, certainly from the Braita, we could have thought that this matter of asking for forgiveness only has to do when you cause boshet, mm-hmm. when you cause insult, or perhaps when you cause tsar, you cause pain, mm-hmm. but not when you just do something that doesn't cause anyone pain or insult, just causes them a wound that they have to go to the doctor, but if it didn't hurt and didn't insult, you might think from the sources in front of us, before we got to the Rambam, that you don't have to ask for forgiveness. The Rambam says you have to ask for forgiveness, and he understands this matter, boshet and tsar, apparently just as a stand-in for all matters, all cases in which you do damage to the body. Now, Just notice one thing here. While the Rambam expands this matter of asking forgiveness beyond what his sources have, he doesn't expand it as far as you might think. He still says that if you did damage to someone's property, you don't have to ask for forgiveness, right?
Right.
Or at least he says you don't need to ask for forgiveness in order to be forgiven by God, which basically means you don't have to ask for forgiveness.
It's true, so if you destroyed my house, you just pay for it and that's it?
From this Rambam, it looks like you don't have to ask for forgiveness. Now, let me just want to say one more thing before I go on, which is the following. I said 30 seconds ago that the Rambam seems to have gone beyond his sources. The source only says boshet and tsar. He expands it to all damage to the body. Now, it might be that I'm right about that, or it might be that the Rambam is a source that we don't know about.
Or he might see a damage to the body as a form of boshet too. You know, if you
are no, but that does, that doesn't solve the problem. How does the Rambam know this distinction? So I just want to point out that there are many, many, many cases in which it turns out that the Rambam has decided halacha in the Mishnah Torah on the basis of sources that we don't have.
Do we know
Wait a second. How do we know this? Because as in the past 100 years, material from the Cairo Geniza has been unearthed and published, we found that halachot that are in the Mishnah Torah that were not understood or misunderstood or whose sources we didn't know for hundreds of years, suddenly we uncover a new lost book from the Geniza in Cairo, and we see, here's the Rambam source. And it's actually an amazing, amazing process.
Have there been cases when the halakha was really misunderstood?
Absolutely. That's crazy. Yeah. The Rambam, even with all our computers today, the Rambam knew more Torah than we know.
Right.
Do you have an example offhand?
Oh yeah. Well, I'll give you an example. The Rambam says, from the Mishnah in the last chapter of Sanhedrin and from the Tosefta, we see that it says, if you put things together, that Chasidei Umot Olam Yesh Lam Chelek L'Olam Haba, that the pious of the nations have a share in the world to come. And you can also understand that who is a pious of the nations? Someone who keeps the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Because the Gemara in the Sechel Sanhedrin says that that's what the nations have to do, to keep the seven Mitzvot of Noahites. Mm-hmm. And therefore you'd expect the Rambam to write in the Mishnah Torah that a non-Jew that keeps the seven Mitzvot has a place in the world to come. That would be the conclusion based on the sources in the Mishnah, the Talmud, and the Tosefta. However, the Rambam didn't write that. The Rambam wrote that a non-Jew who keeps the seven mitzvot under the condition and with the understanding that those mitzvot are divine, and he doesn't keep them simply on the base of his own understanding, that person has Olam Haba. But if you do the seven mitzvot simply because you think it's the right thing to do, without seeing them as divine, you don't have a place in the world to come. That's what the Rambam writes. And that halakha has been tremendously disturbing to many people, including Moses Mendelssohn, who wrote a whole letter about it. How could the Rambam say such a thing? Not only was Moses Mendelssohn offended morally, he also said the Rambam's no source. And indeed, the Rambam had no source until 1932.
He found it then.
In 1932, a sage by the name of Enelau, going through Geniza material, found a whole book that we never heard of. And it says explicitly, a book from the days of the Tanaim. It's called... I forgot what it was published as. And it turns out that it was the Rambam source. And since 1932, we now know the Rambam source.
So
fascinating.
We kasher the Rambam.
Fascinating. And there's many other examples. That's the one that comes to mind. Okay, so now, let's go back here. So we said that the Rambam is pretty faithful to his sources, except that he expands from boshet to all damages done to the body, but not to the possessions of another person. Let's go now to this second part of the Rambam.
I mean, he also clarifies this whole pronoun issue. It says, well, or not, or he just... He says that you have to ask the injured party for forgiveness, right?
So you know, and the last two words, v'yimcholo, and he actually does forgive you, which was also missing.
But here you're actually talking to the injured party versus just dealing with God.
No.
Yeah, no, but Ram makes explicit what I had said the Mishnah infers.
That you
have to ask forgiveness from the person that you caused damage to, and he has to forgive you.
Even though
only in the passive voice it's God. And it's Kalvari. But that's Yimcholo.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So the Rambam makes clear things that were only inferred in the Mishnah.
You have here too, Lo Nimchalavo, no.
So let's go on. I'm in the Rambam. Vasur lenechba liot achzari velo yimcholo. It's forbidden for the person who was damaged to be achzari, to be cruel, right? That's what it says in our Mishnah. Velo yimcholo, such that he wouldn't forgive him, right? The person who got hurt, that he wouldn't forgive the person who did the hurt. Ve'ein zo derech zeri Yisrael. That's not the way the Jews behave. This writes the Rambam. Ela, kevan shebikesh mimenu achovel, v'nitchanen lo pam rishona v'shnia, v'yada shehu shav micheto, v'nicham al ra'ato, yimcholo. So here the Rambam writes something that I have not found the source for. It could be that I was only using my computer program. I wasn't at home with my books. But the Rambam is very explicit here about something that Ilana said earlier.
Yeah.
Look what the Rambam does. He says that when someone asks you for forgiveness, you shouldn't be cruel and you should forgive. But when you should forgive, only if he asks you and begs of you once and twice, and you're certain that he's really sincere and he really did tshuva, he's really sorry, only then should you quickly forgive him. The Rambam seems to have turned the person who got hurt into an arbiter. An arbiter and a quality control person. In other words, the person who did the damage has to do tshuva. And part of his tshuva is asking for forgiveness. And you, as the person who's listening to him ask for forgiveness, you have to gauge if you should forgive him or not. And don't forgive him too quickly. Don't be achzari. That's what we got from the Mishnah and the Gemara. But also, says the Rambam, forgive him only when he deserves to be forgiven. He asks once, it's not enough. Asks twice, it's not enough. If he asks once and twice and begs, and you're certain that he's really sincere, only then forgive him. That's very, very interesting what the Rambam says.
Yeah.
And it looks like the following. I'll just repeat and clarify what I said. God will forgive the person who's asking forgiveness, but only after you forgive that person. And don't be too quick to forgive them, because that person who did the damage has to undergo a process of tshuva. And if you forgive him too quickly, you are cutting off that process before it could run its full and proper course. Now here's an idea that certainly Christians don't share with Jews.
Right.
But the Rambam claims that you, as the person who've been hurt, you have to provide the space for the person who hurt you to do tshuva. It depends on you to let him do the process of tshuva properly. Don't be cruel, but also don't be too quick. Don't rush.
So there's a healing process that happens in the relationship between the two of them.
I'm sure that you're right, but that is not really the point here. I think the point is that the relationship on earth is the substratum of what's happening in heaven. Or to put it differently, leave out heaven. Literally, it's heaven, of course, but in a deeper sense, you as the person who's been hurt has to help the person who hurt you to do proper tshuva.
Right.
And forgiving, right, you're right. And forgiving too quickly is actually not in his best interest.
Right.
That's fascinating. That's really fascinating.
So you're a tshuva coach. In a way.
Very good. Oh, I'm gonna write that down. Tshuva coach. Tshuva coach.
And it's, in a way, you know, there's something very wonderful about it. Because the insult, the injury, is a diminishing and disempowering thing. But when you become a tshuva coach, you become empowered because you have the power over his tshuva.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that restores part of your dignity too.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I'm going to make a note of that also.
So I think it's a very, very clever process. Mm. A very healthy process too.
Mm. Restores dignity. Mm.
And also, the injury, it was creating a gap between these two, a kind of slash of and that could be a beginning of hate. But if you're his tshuva coach, you, just by the fact that you're responsible for that, it creates a closeness too. So that is a beginning of...
Ideally.
Of an,
yeah, I would add that.
A big mess.
This is really very difficult stuff.
But it's a very healthy process.
Well, because on the one hand, you can't not forgive him.
Right.
You have to, but he's got to do...
Yes.
This work. So
the way you go hand by hand,
right,
leading each other.
Connected.
If I remember correctly... The last time I taught this material was not too long, this was a few years ago, after there'd been a terrible massacre in Amish country.
Oh, with the girls in the school.
Yeah. And the families of the girls who were killed immediately came out and forgave the killers.
Oh.
And I mentioned in the class that, according to the Rambam, that's actually not the right thing to do.
It's too fast.
Right. We hear all the time in America, and
yes,
this comes from Christianity,
yeah, mm-hmm,
that you always should forgive immediately. It's the most beautiful and most deepest thing you can do. And from the point of view of me, the person who's been hurt, it is wonderful to forgive. But I have responsibility to the person who did the damage to me, not to forgive him too quickly.
It's hard.
Hard to forgive.
Right.
Yes,
I think Christianity sometimes equates not forgiving with holding a grudge.
Ah, that's beautiful, because that's exactly the point of the next sources. To distinguish between, you said it exactly.
I really don't know the difference between the two. So could it, someone illuminate that
yes
for me?
Yeah, but let's wait for the sources.
Oh, okay.
Now the truth is, Amiram, you heard me talk about this on a Leil Yom Kippur. Didn't you once come to a class I gave on the subject at Shari Tefillah on Yom Kippur night?
You may have.
Versus Shavuot.
Oh,
yeah, I think.
You also gave it at some point, I think, in the Parsha of the Week class.
Uh-huh,
when we were close to Yom Kippur. Or Rosh,
okay, I come back to this theme. It's fascinating.
Because otherwise I wouldn't have known it. I mean, otherwise I wouldn't have come up with it on my own.
He might simply be being modest. I'm not sure.
No, I'm serious. I actually try to pay attention to what you're saying. Sometimes I remember, but I would not have come up with that much.
So, but what Lan said is very honest.
So
most people, it takes them many, many minutes to absorb the distinction we're about to make. So here we go. Let's try and make this distinction.
All right.
Okay.
So let's go on here.
I've been asking that question all my life.
What is ready to forgive?
Let's go on to the source I brought here in D, Tractate Yoma, Chapter 8, Mishnah 9. And this is a Mishnah that many people are familiar with. And the Mishnah says as follows.
Ah,
yeah. And I didn't bring the English. Everyone
right
should know it.
That's good.
Averot Shabin Adam Lamakom Yom Kippurim Mechaper. Sins between man and God, Yom Kippurim atones. Averot shebein adam lachavero, ein Yom Kippurim mechaper. Ad sheyotze chavero. But sins between man and his fellow, Yom Kippur does not atone until he will appease his fellow, until the person who did the hurt, caused the hurt, will ask for forgiveness. Now in the third word of the second line, Et zo darash Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. This drasha was offered by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Mikol hatotechem lifnei Hashem titaru. It's a verse from Leviticus chapter 16, and it says, from all your sins in the presence of God, titaru, you will be purified. The pshat of the verse is that from all your sins before God, you will be purified. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah changes the place of the comma.
Yeah.
And he says, read it like this, from all your sins before God, comma, you will be purified. That's what Yom Kippur does. It purifies you from sins before God, inference being not sins before man. And then he goes on to explain the last word of the second line, Averot ben Adam l'makom, Yom Kippurim mechaper. Sins between man and God, Yom Kippurim atones. Averot ben Adam l'chavero, whereas sins between man and man, Ein Yom Kippurim mechaper, Ad sheyiratzeh et chavero. Sins between man and man, Yom Kippurim doesn't atone until he will forgive his fellow.
So when we have sins against God, don't we have to go through a teshuva too?
Yes.
Or is Yom Kippurim sufficient?
Yes, we do, but it's an internal process. It doesn't involve necessarily others. You're right, that's missing from the Mishnah. That's what we discussed in other Mishnayot, right around here. It's just the Gemara. There is an opinion that says Yom Kippurim atones without tshuva.
Really?
Yeah, for sin between man and God.
What's the chicken for? Which chicken?
Okay. You can forgo the chicken.
Ah, kapara.
Yeah, so now, this Mishnah, on the one hand, will give us some insight into the genesis of what we read in the Rambam, but on the other hand, it still leaves us with a question.
Yeah.
Because the Rambam expanded this matter of asking forgiveness from your fellow from not just boshit that you caused him, but to all sins to his body, not to his property. Now we understand the Rambam got it from this Mishnah in Masechet Yomah. But the Rambam doesn't go as far as the Mishnah and Masechet Yomah. Masechet Yomah says you have to ask forgiveness for all sins to another person.
Including monetary.
That's what's implied. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Rambam says it's only sins to the body. So it looks like the Rambam, you can even say perhaps the Rambam compromised between this Mishnah that says you have to ask for forgiveness for all sins to another person on the one hand, and the other source that said ask for forgiveness only for boshet. The Rambam, you could say, compromised and said, take it in the middle. Ask forgiveness for sin between man and his fellow, but only those that are to the body, but not to the possessions. Could be.
But except
for the Rambam's going to say something different in the next source.
That's what I was about to say, that in the Hilchot Shuva of the Rambam, I found...
Here it is.
Okay.
Sorry that I preempted you. So here we have the Rambam's Laws of Repentance, Hilchot Shuva, it's an E on the sheet. Chapter 2, Laws 9 and 10, and I brought the English here. And don't worry, Lan, we're getting to what you want us to get to.
Okay.
Says the Rambam, and you can follow in the English, it's a good translation. Ein hatshuva velo yom kippurim mechaprim ela al averot shebein adam lamakom. He has the other tshuva, right? Kagon mishachal devar asur, ובעל בילה אסורה וכיוצא בהן, אבל עבירות שבין אדם לחברו, כגון החובל את חברו או מקלל חברו או גוזלו,
which is mamon,
כיוצא בהן אינו נמחל לו לעולם עד שייתן לחברו משהו חייב לו וירצהו. אף על פי שיחזיר לו ממון שהוא חייב לו, צריך לרצותו. Right? All you did is embarrass him with words. Let me just stop there and point that to the Rambam, simply bringing our Mishnah that we just saw in Masechet Yomah. And then he goes on to say what I think it was Benny mentioned, or no, it was Yoni mentioned, about the three times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, Lo ratza chaver olim cholo, if the guy who got hurt didn't want to forgive, mi vilo shura shel shlosha b'nei adam, he brings a group of three people.
What are these shtadlanim kind of
people? Miriav. Fogimbo, umevakshim imenu. But you bring three people with you, and they all say, please, please forgive our friend. And picking what you said, I guess that it means you have to ask forgiveness, or you have to at least confess your sin between, not just in front of the person that you hurt, but three friends. So it's part of that process of really, really doing tshuva, making amends for what went on your soul when you embarrassed and insulted.
It also enforces the idea that saying, you know, I'm sorry, please forgive me, in a sense is its own sacrifice. It's a small portion of it if mm-hmm. you have to do it in front of three friends and the other person.
Yeah, yeah.
But here is yeah. the hardest thing. Mochel belev shalem.
Okay, let's read that. So it says you bring the three friends, and they... And then this is in the second to last line of the paragraph we're reading, the third word of the line, Lo nitzratze lehem, even though you brought three people, the guy still wouldn't forgive. Mivilo shnia v'shlishit. You do it a second and a third time. Lo ratza, and then he still didn't want to forgive. Minicho v'olechlo. Now you can leave him alone and don't have to ask more. And this guy who didn't forgive, he's the sinner. We don't have to read the last line. Okay, so all this fits into things we're talking about. Let's read.
That's what I said earlier. You did your part.
You did your part, right. You did your part. Even though the first person won't forgive you, you've done enough, and God will forgive you.
But you have to bring the three people three times.
Yeah.
You don't just go three times.
And you have to make amends to what you did.
You have to bring three people three times.
Yeah. You know...
That's the hardest thing.
Earlier, Ilana had said that this is so powerful and beautiful and so much in place and so reparative. And Ilana had said... I'm sorry.
Maribel.
And Maribel had said, ideally, implying this is really, really hard. I'll tell you the truth. Guess my experience could be limited. I've never seen this in my life. I've never done it. Right? Just to bring us back to reality, this is really good and really important and could really be very, very powerful on so many different levels. I personally have never done it.
In the movie Ushpizin, there is the case that he took the material for the sukkah from another person, not knowing that it was a sukkah material. And then he runs after him all the time. Uh-huh. Please say machul, machul. Please say machul. Finally, the guy is sick of him and says machul, machul, machul.
Only because you opened the door.
Forgiven, forgiven, forgiven.
Is it because you've never done this? Because you've never,
never sinned.
Never sinned.
You're married to another person, or you can't bring yourself to do it, or
it doesn't work.
Come Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, you just don't. Think about it. What stops you from doing this? Only because you opened the door to your
of
personal
course.
Life.
I First of all, I have never done it. The reason is not because I've never sinned.
In the sense that you would need to take three people. Okay.
I suppose the reason I've never done it is because I'm human. Yes.
So, I mean, you spent, if I remember correctly, 10 years in the yeshiva.
Yes.
And I would imagine that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur came around about 10 times or so.
On average.
His math is really good.
And the whole school, you know, the whole yeshiva, no one.
Well, I didn't see such a thing. Now, what I have seen is around the time of Rosh Hashanah, and especially Erev Yom Kippur, guys going around to everyone and saying, forgive me.
Right. If I ever forgive, if I
clearly
ever
that's not what the halakha has in mind at all.
No, they have to be specific.
Right? It's not just, if I did something wrong, please forgive me, I forgive you. That is meaningless and empty.
I've actually experienced that.
Sure, the red light stands up.
This man came up to my dad in our church, and he had a list of, yeah, I used to be a Christian.
He's a clown.
Had a list of things he did bad to people. And he went up and he had Lon, senior, who says, I want to apologize to you because I spoke behind your back about this, this, and this.
you didn't know anything about it, and you weren't harmed until I tell you I'm
harmed. No, my dad forgave him in the end. He actually
really
wrote down every avira he did against people.
That's the people from the 10-step.
That's wonderful. By the way,
the alcoholic anonymous, 12, all these, yeah. They demand to make amends and to ask forgiveness.
That's powerful.
Do you want this back, or can I?
Give it back. Get back.
I need to go.
Okay. Thank you for joining us.
Yes.
I want to say two things. One is that
in the next class.
There's actually discussion in the Mishnah Berurah concerning that case. Should you go and apologize for something that the person doesn't know you did to them?
Oh, what was the answer?
It's left in a Tzurich Iyun. That's a question. Depends on the circumstances. It's interesting machloket there. Interesting disagreement. I also wanted to respond. I don't see too many movies, perhaps once every 3 or 4 years, but I once saw a movie that opened with the following scene. This movie was called Hester Street. Anyone ever see it?
Mm-hmm. Which one?
Yeah. Hester Street.
Ah, I read the book.
It opened with a scene from the Lower East Side in Brooklyn, in which it's... In Manhattan, it is?
Manhattan. Shows them how much I know.
And you see, it's black and white. You see a Jew with a long beard and in black clothing, and apparently it's like the 1920s. It's in a little hovel. Hovel, you say? Hovel?
Hovel.
And it's Erev Yom Kippur, and he's going through his calendar, and every single day of the year, he had written in his sins from that day.
Wow!
At the beginning of the movie. So I want to tell you that so influenced me that I actually started to do that.
All right.
I didn't keep it up for my whole life. But that's actually what the halacha would
you put that in the safe with a lock on it.
Similar to what you discussed, what you mentioned. That's really interesting.
What's this thing that, oh, you had all the information in front of you to be able to do this?
He's good.
He's very good.
What was that thing that we read, right? It wasn't something before... Was it before? There was something that you read in the presence of two other guys.
Yes, yes.
These shifting groups of
right. As you know, for any transgression or whatever, knowingly or unknowingly, in front of a baked dinner, three people or whatever, and you take your turns and go around.
I don't know. It's something in our school.
Hatrat Nedarim. We're talking about Hatrat Nedarim.
Was it just before Rosh Hashanah or just before Yom Kippur?
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neder can be.
Erev Rosh Hashanah.
Okay.
So that was but the Vidui of the Kohen Gadol, is it specific or just kind of general? Does he walk with his calendar?
So the Mishnah says that he says Chatati Pashati. But does that mean that he has to be Mefaret? Has to explain? I don't know.
I hope not, because it's a public ordeal.
You will have to have my sins and Rabbi Schlesinger's.
Okay, so let's go on now. We're reading the...
I just have a question before we move on. I don't know if you're getting into this or not, but what is the difference between between not forgiving and holding a grudge?
Okay, we're getting there.
Okay.
What does forgiving even mean?
Okay, so let me just say that the truth is a serious, a relevant study of forgiveness actually requires deep thought. Forgiveness is a very, very complicated concept. And so many times we talk about it as if we know what we're talking about, and we don't. This goes back to 1999... I was teaching something about forgiveness, and I had a little bit of an inkling that there's some depth here, but I really hadn't yet known how deep it is. And someone in the class pointed out to me that there's a whole movement out in the world of simply defining what forgiveness is. and they have studies and they have conferences. There's a National Forgiveness Society.
Really?
And I ordered some of their material and I started reading it. And it's a whole study. What does it mean to forgive? It has so many different levels of psychological and spiritual meaning.
My gosh.
It's a very, very complicated thing. So I'm not giving you any answers now, but it's really complicated. We'll touch it on a tiny bit. If we go on, let's go. Okay. So the Rambam says in the second paragraph of the halachot we were reading, it's the middle of the page, Asur l'adam liot achzari v'lo yitpayes. It's forbidden for man to be cruel and not to be appeased. That's clear, right? Talked about that. Elien noach lirtzot v'kasheh lichos. Rather, you should be easy to appease and hard to anger. And at the time that the sinner requests him to forgive, he should forgive with a full heart and with a glad soul. If the person hurt him much and sinned him much, he shouldn't take revenge and he shouldn't bear a grudge. And this is the way of the seed of Israel and their proper heart. Okay.
So we...
do you ever see that?
I really want to finish the material. Okay. So what I want to do now is read... just pointing out the certain tension in what we just read in those last three lines of the Rambam. The Rambam said in what we just read that you should forgive when you're asked for forgiveness. He didn't say just forgive. He said when he asks you, then forgive. On the other hand, the Rambam said you shouldn't bear a grudge and shouldn't take revenge. Isn't there a tension here?
Yes.
Because it says, forgive when you're asked. Inference being, don't forgive if you're not asked. That goes back to things we talked about half an hour ago. But then the Rambam says, you shouldn't bear a grudge.
Exactly.
So it means, in certain cases, I can't forgive him yet because he didn't ask for it, but I shouldn't bear a grudge. Doesn't that seem to be problematic? Perfect. That's the tension we want to deal with. So let's read now one more source. And it's the one on the last page of paper. Again, I have the English. Why don't I just read the English view to make it go quicker, because we really do have to come to a close within 15 minutes. One who takes revenge on someone else is transgressing a negative commandment, for it is written, you shall not take revenge. Even though committing the sin does not make one liable to flogging, it is nevertheless a very bad characteristic. It's no punishment, but you shouldn't do it. It is fitting to wipe away his hurt. Look at that phrase, wipe away his hurt. Let's just read the Hebrew there. The words are ma'avir al midotav. It's the second line in the Hebrew. Ma'avir al midotav. My translation is wipe away his hurt concerning all things of this world. For in truth, the enlightened understand that all personal affronts are meaningless and are simply not worth taking revenge over. You should just forget it. Not have it affect you. Because the truth is, you're only digging your own grave. It's only an albatross around your own neck. You keep that in your heart, it simmers, it bothers you for hours, for days, for weeks, for months. I just can't but tell the story that I've told so many times. Once here in Dallas, the first year I got to Dallas, I was teaching a class on a related subject, and the guy in the class raises his hand, tells me a story. He says he just got back from South Africa visiting his mother. And his mother was 80, 82, 83. And he said his mother and his aunt, meaning the two sisters, were on the couch, and they're in their 80s. And at a certain point in the conversation, one says to the other, "Mommy always loved you more than me." And you see, she's full of anger and resentment from 80 years ago. Says the Rambam. What is revenge?
There's a lot of people like that.
If, for example, his fellow came and said, please lend me your axe, and he responded, he will not lend it out. And then later the second one went to the first and asked to borrow his axe, and he responded by saying, just as you did not lend me your axe, so I will not lend you my axe. Then he's taking revenge. Rather, when one comes to request, he should lend wholeheartedly and not recompense the other in the way that he was treated. Similar situations have the same law. So revenge is doing a deed that is indicative of your feelings inside. But what is a grudge? That's something else. Similarly, anyone who bears a grudge against another Jew is also transgressing a negative command, for it's written, nor bear a grudge against the children of your people. What is a grudge? If, for example, Reuven asked Shimon to lend him his house or lend him his ox, and to rent him his house or lend him his ox, Simon refused. And then after some time, Shimon asks for a loan or a rental from Reuven, and Reuven gives it to him but tells him, I'll lend it to you. I am not like you, and neither am I going to play tit for tat. Then Reuven is transgressing the injunction against bearing a grudge. So in other words, if you do what you're asked to do, you're not taking revenge, but you feel, and this, it's not clear in the Rambam if the feeling, the grudge, is the sin or it's the saying of it. We won't discuss that. That's a big question. But
making it clear.
But it's no physical act, either the saying or the feeling that I harbor something in my heart against him, that is bearing a grudge. Reuven must rather erase the matter. And in the Hebrew, the erase the matter was Yimche adava mi libo, wipe it out of your heart, and must not bear a grudge.
But then we don't want us to forget what Amalek did to us.
Okay, let's not solve everything at once. But rather must totally erase the matter from his heart and not remember it at all. This is the proper temperament. Okay, so now let's deal with the big question. On the one hand, the Rambam says you're supposed to erase the matter from your heart, wipe away the hurt, forget it, it doesn't matter. If you hold a grudge, it only is bad for you, it only holds you back, it only simmers, and actually it's shooting yourself in the leg. Forget about it, it doesn't matter. On the other hand, says the Rambam, you shouldn't forgive someone for what they did to you until they ask for forgiveness. In one place he said, ask once or twice and beg, only then you forgive them, and only when you're certain that they actually are deserving of forgiveness. So what's going on here? We seem to have a contradiction. So I want to answer on two levels. Here we go. On the one hand, note that when the Rambam talks about not taking revenge and not bearing a grudge, he's talking about cases in which the person who harmed you didn't break the law. The person didn't lend you his ox. He didn't rent you his house, but he didn't break the law. He's allowed not to lend you his ox and not to rent you the house. He didn't break the law. He hurt you. He offended you. He didn't break the law. Therefore, he doesn't have to ask for forgiveness. Therefore, you don't have to forgive him. In other words, in the case of revenge and grudge, it's only about you. It's not about him. He doesn't have to ask for forgiveness. He didn't break the law. He did something not nice, but it's not a legal infraction for which he is obligated to do tshuva and to ask for forgiveness. All that we're talking about is your heart, your feelings, your life. And there the Rambam says, you want to be good to yourself? Forget about it. Don't let it simmer. Don't stew in your own juices. The proper thing for the Jewish people, for human beings who want to live productive, healthy lives, is just to wipe it away. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, the case in which the Rambam talks about granting forgiveness only when the person requests it, that's cases in which he broke the law. He punched you in the nose.
Or embarrassed you.
That's also breaking the law, right? And he has to pay the Chamisha Dvarim, the five payments. He broke the law. He sinned. He has to do tshuva. Part of his tshuva is asking for forgiveness, and you have to be part of his tshuva process. You have to be the arbitrator of his tshuva process by not granting him forgiveness until he deserves it. That's point number one. So in other words, there's certain cases that are only cases of revenge and grudge bearing. There's no sin involved, and you have to just wipe it away. There are other cases in which there's a sin involved, and you have to be there for the arbiter of his tshuva. So we made a nice distinction here. It's true. It fits in all the sources in the Rambam. You can check it. It's true, and it's also true in human life. However, it's of course more complicated than that, because A is related to B, but B isn't related to A, and I'll explain what I mean. In the case in which the person didn't transgress, didn't break the law, he simply didn't lend the ox.
But he shamed you.
Wait a second. He didn't break the law. He didn't. So he doesn't have to do tshuva. You don't have to forgive him. It's just a matter of wiping away the hurt within you, not bearing grudge, like we said. That's a simple case. But the other case in which he actually caused you damage, he broke the law, in that case, there are two things going on, not just one, but two. You have to be the arbiter of his tshuva. He has to ask for forgiveness, and you have to grant it only when he's willing. But at the same time, there's the mitzvah of not bearing a grudge. And the two are independent and completely unrelated. This is the big point. Not bearing a grudge is between you and yourself and you and God. Forgiving and not forgiving, that's between you and the other person, and there's no connection between them. In other words, if you bear a grudge, you're not supposed to, but if you can't help it, you still have to forgive when he's deserving of forgiveness. In other words, you have to say, I forgive you, even when you're still bearing a grudge. They're two separate mitzvot, and they're two separate psychological processes, even though it's hard to think of it. In other words, you have to say, I forgive you, when he deserves to be forgiven, even if you're still bearing a grudge. You're not supposed to bear a grudge, but if you do, that shouldn't stop you from doing the mitzvah of forgiving when he's ready to be forgiven. And on the other hand, if you're able to completely wipe out the grudge, wipe away the hate as you're supposed to, you still have to tell the person, I don't forgive you, until he's ready to be forgiven. And these two things are unrelated. One has to do with bein adam la'atzmo, between man and himself. The other is between adam v'chaviro, as far as your personal, psychological, and spiritual health and obligations. You have to wipe away the grudge. On the other hand, you have an obligation to him to forgive him when he's ready and not forgive him when he's not ready.
That's heavy stuff.
Well, how, if you're supposed to be the one who's, I forget the word was, but if you're like mediating and you have to forgive this person when you think that they're deserving of forgiveness, how do you correctly judge if they're deserving of forgiveness if you're still holding a grudge? And therefore, if you can't correctly tell whether they're deserving of forgiveness or not, then God can't forgive them because you can't forgive them.
Fantastic.
Very good.
There's nothing I can say. It goes back to what I think was implied, what Mary Beth said an hour ago, which was, ideally. In other words, I don't know if this all could work. It's a beautiful system, and I would say that the study of the subject, even if we never put it into full practice, is still tremendously spiritually uplifting and morally cleansing. It has a great value to me. I can tell you my personal life, thinking about this, certainly has changed my life and uplifted my life. But push comes to shove, in particular situations, am I able to put this into practice the way I claim that the Rambam wants us to? What can I say? Right?
Hard. It seems that in all of these situations he's talking about with revenge and grudges, he's being very specific about actions, not just what I'm thinking in my mind, but how it manifests in my interaction with this person who's...
But in the grudge case, there's not necessarily actions involved.
But he says it's I lend you my lawnmower and I don't say to you, look how much better than you I'm behaving because I'm lending you my lawnmower. So It's not just what I'm thinking.
It's also what I'm saying, you're saying.
Apparently. That's what
that's a machloket in the commentaries on the Rambam.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Rambam mean that as long as you don't say these words, it's called that you don't have a grudge? Or is the words just the expression of the inner feelings? The real point is, and this seems to be closer to the meaning of the Rambam, the real point is the inner feelings, because he says you have to erase it from the heart, completely wipe it away. It's an argument among the commentators. But it looks to me the spirit of it is that you have to, like he says, completely wipe it away. Not just don't say the words, but get over it. Now that's, of course, I would say, a lifelong process of teaching yourself, reminding yourself, instructing yourself, and it requires a lot of thought and introspection. Just think about what a grudge is. A grudge is really, really, really simply shooting yourself in the foot. It has nothing to do with the other person. It's between you and yourself. And this matter we talked about for the past hour of distinguishing between forgiveness, which is you and him, and grudge, which is you and you, I think this makes it easier to get over your grudge, because you realize it's not about forgiving. Leave forgiving out of it. Leave him out of it. It's about me. It's about what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing. And the minute you leave the other person out of it, it's just your own spiritual health. You can easily come to the conclusion, I shouldn't say easily, come to the conclusion that really, I should get over it. So many people say, it's easy for you to say, but I found that, like I said, that learning this and thinking about this has helped me immensely to get over it. It just doesn't matter. Hmm.
There is a member in Sheret Israel, Max Goldblatt,
yes.
That has gone through the entire Holocaust in a terrible way. And he told me, he's very active in the March of Living, and but he told me that he he's not angry with the Germans. He said, I can't afford it.
Well, that's exactly it. He
but
just told us the Rambam.
Every time he goes to shul, he says Kaddish. So in a way, he didn't forget, but
didn't
he's not
forget.
Angry.
Well, just so you
but
know, I was paying attention last time we talked about this. You gave an example, or somebody gave an example of, you lend somebody your lawnmower, whatever it is, and they break it, or they don't return it, and you can forgive them, and you can, not hold a grudge, and yet when they come back the next week or next month or whatever it is and ask to borrow something else, you can say to yourself, well, last time I did that, I didn't get it back. I need, this is not something I can afford to lose or afford to break. No, you can't, and that's still not holding a grudge.
Right, protecting yourself. Absolutely, that's absolutely true. And making that distinction between the grudge and protecting yourself is also a difficult but possible.
I just want you to know I was paying attention.
That comes up in judging others favorably, right? It's the same thing. It's a mitzvah to judge others favorably, but also to protect yourself at the same time.
Sure.
All right.
Now, can we see you finally?
In 3 minutes.